actual reflectors are here? I see a show of hands for reflectors. One, two, three. Three? What the hell are the rest of you doing here? You're sick people. You have no other way to spend your money? You think this is going to help you understand reflectors? Ah, that's what it was, right. Okay, I wondered why there were so many people here. I'm only going to talk to the reflectors. The rest of you can sort of listen in, sort of. I should put the three of you on display, right?
I feel really proud of you.
You know, I talked yesterday about the fact that I'd sort of given projectors the shaft for many years because I put all my focus in generators. I did nothing for reflectors, really, other than the few opportunities I had to really, yeah, just be able to impart the wisdom of a cycle. You know, the cycle of the moon. You see, when I say that projectors are alien to me, they're alien, but I sort of get it, you know? But I realize intrinsically that reflectors are really odd, and they're odd in an extraordinary way. I mean, one of the things that fascinates me about the nature of the reflector is that my assumption is that it is some kind of genetic mutation. They're not like everybody else at all. And I think it's obvious from the moment that you see them, that is, the moment that you see their design. Because, in fact, when you're looking at their design, well, you're not looking at anything, are you? I mean, that's the thing that I find so fascinating about the reflector design. You know, you put up 95 reflector designs, and it's like, well, you know, all you see is these hanging gates and whiteness. But you have no life force to grab onto. See, I joke about us non-sacral beings being parasitic. But the reality is that if you're a manifester or a projector, you have an inherent life force at work. That's what a channel is. It's one of the most mysterious things in the knowledge. You know, you look at the inanimate object and it only has the potential of a hanging gate. The 25th gate. That's the inanimate object. Only the potential. You know, what the magician dreams of is being able to connect to the inanimate and bring a life force out of it. Frankenstein, you know? And then you look at a single cell. And the moment you look at the single cell, you see that, oh, there's a channel. That is the potential of a channel. And we go immediately from the inanimate to the life force. Now that's quite a difference. You know, on the obvious level, when we think about those things, it's very, 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 very obviously different. The rabbit and the rock. You can tell right away that one is inanimate and one has got the life force. You know? No rocket scientist necessary for this one, right? Inanimate, animate. And then I look at the reflector. Now, it's clear to me, obviously, that the reflector has this potential for the life force, obviously. But if I just try to deconstruct it, you know, if I try to stand back from it and look at it and see, why is this so different? It's because they are the only beings on this planet that take their life force from the totality. I mean, somebody once asked me, what would be my ideal design? Not somebody very clever, by the way, but what the hell? And my answer was, no activations at all. I mean, the real reflector, right? No activations at all. No hanging gates. Nada. You know? One with the gods. Eh? You know? The gods have a bad meal, I get gas. You know? Immediate connection to the gods. Perfect. And when I think about the reflector that way, I begin to understand them. See, I try to teach mystically the way in which all of this is being organized into a single life. So much about what we do on this plane is so banal and locked in through the not-self homogenization. And that when you're looking at solar types, manifestor, generator, projector, we are dominated by the sun-earth in a way that is very, very difficult for us to challenge. It is our prime imprinting. And it actually unites all of us. See, one of the great jokes of a reflector is to talk about their purpose. I mean, it is. It is a great joke. Because, in fact, the sun-earth is secondary to them and will always be secondary. They're different. I mean, they're really different. You see, they are not driven by the life force. It is not the sun that fills them with life. It is the moon that drives them. They're different. You see, you cannot compare them. We talk about conditioning. It is one of the main themes of this knowledge. To understand when you're being conditioned by the other. To understand your openness. To understand what it brings in your life. But in fact, that only makes sense if you're talking about solar types. I mean, after all, what does conditioning mean to a reflector when there is no counterpoint? You see, if you're a projector and you only have two centers defined, and it looks like you're really, 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 really open, doesn't it? But you're not. You have this very fixed imprint. And that very fixed imprint gives you a counterpoint to the conditioning. It's what gives the conditioning its power as a reference to who you are, the challenge. The challenge in all of us solar beings to come to grips with who we are and to deny the power of conditioning to run our lives. But if you're a reflector, you're born to be conditioned. You're not born with a fixed imprint. You're not born with a fixed life force that gives you a fixed notion of where or what may be? Not at all. See, my connection to beings is through their auras. I can remember when I began my mystical process on the island, somebody gave me dowsing sticks. Dowsing sticks. These are copper rods that I would use to locate water and find things in the ground. And it was kind of cute. I have three open motors. I'm very sensitive to the environment around me. And I began to measure auras. I can remember, I think even a lock would remember, in the very early days of my teaching, when I was still teaching people in my house, every once in a while at the break, I'd take them outside and measure their auras. You know, just to see how big their auras were, you know. It's when I discovered that my pets were dangerous. You know, dogs and cats have enormous auras, almost as big as ours. Eh? And it's like, wow, you know, to begin to see in a way that you could see it, you know, because I could measure it. And it started this very, very long process for me of beginning to see that what I understand intellectually and teach you as type, it's simply a language for what the aura is. Because it's the aura that tells our story. It's the aura that does the talking. You know? My manifestor aura is very specific. When I meet manifestors, it's so obvious. It's so specific, that aura. You can feel how tight it is. You step into a generator aura, it's so obvious. I mean, for me, You know, this enveloping power of their aura, the projector that zeroes in on you. But the reflector? We had a country home when I was growing up on a little lake in central Quebec. And it was one of these moraines. You know, it was the result of glaciation had moved away, and you had millions of little flat stones. And I can remember as a 6 or 7 year old how much I loved to stand on the bank of that lake. And I would take those stones in my hand and I would zoom, slip them across the surface of the lake. And they would bounce like a UFO, you know. They would never really go into the water. It was fantastic to watch. The water is the reflector. And the stone is all of us. And it never, never, never gets in. It never, ever, ever really gets in. It doesn't. It just, slides off. And you see, what we don't understand, that is those that are non-reflector, is that this quote-unquote Teflon aura is an absorbing aura. You slide off, but you do not slide off without being taken in. But you are taken in a way that has nothing to do with the normal way in which we understand conditioning. This process I've gone through over this week about signatures, looking to the other side of the negative theme. Perhaps the one most difficult to grasp is the theme of surprise. This signature of the reflector. What in fact does it actually mean? When I first began to describe the reflector, I described them as the canary in the coal mine. You know, this was the tradition in the coal mines in Wales. After all, mines, you can reach toxic gas pockets. And of course, miners have died from all of that. So they would take canaries in cages down into the mines with them. And the canaries have a very, very sensitive respiratory system. And if the canary drops dead, everybody had a couple of minutes to get out alive. Many, many canaries saved many human beings' lives. And this was my first description of the reflector to begin to get a sense that they are in some ways guardians of humanity. You see, they do not have a true role. The world is for projectors and generators. It is not for anyone else. This is their world. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a place for the manifester or for the reflector. But it is not our world. I mean, it isn't. It is up to generators and projectors where this planet will go, where consciousness will go. But I've learned something about the mystical process. You need signposts. You know? Weathermen. You know, the people who stand by the roadside and say, yes, you're going in the right direction. You need signposts. See, reflectors are that signpost. And their dilemma with conditioning is that they are designed to process the homogenized world. They have to. They're not here to process abnormality. They're here to process the homogenized world like a radar machine. Have you ever seen these pictures, you know, from movies, you know, where they're tracking an object and you have this screen and there's a sort of a glowing line that goes around the screen, and every time it makes a full circle around the screen, there's another blip. You know, these radar screens. Well, this is a reflector. They process, like radar, the environment around them. And that blip is the cycle of the moon. And every time they go around in their process, radaring the sky, if you will, radaring the human environment, what they're looking for is the blip. They're looking for something different. They're measuring the level of the consciousness field relative to the homogenized programming. You see, if a reflector is not awake, they are a servant of Big Brother. You see, I guarantee you that most of the reflectors who are part of, let's say, our Western culture, that so many of those reflectors are deeply, deeply conservative. I think it's very rare to find a radical, very rare to find a radical reflector, because that's not their job. You see, their job is to measure how well human beings are fucked up by the homogenized field. That's their job. This is what they can feel, because after all, I mean, it's why I asked Darmen, who's the reflector, as you all know, to do the neutrino forecast. Because the neutrino forecast is what reflectors are all about. You see, they take in the homogenized program in a way nobody else does. And they don't take it in to be homogenized themselves. They take it in to be able to recognize the resonance with the world around them. And if the resonance isn't there, they look and they see the problem. They're not fitting in to the homogenized environment. See, they have an incredible ability to spy those who are ready to break out. See, they can really save a life like the canary in the mine, eh? But oh boy, are they deeply, deeply messed up when they're kids. There is this magical capacity in them, but you can see how easily, under the conditioning of the world that we live in, how they are not those that are looking for that break in the homogenized field as something to reward and something to raise up, like me looking at the crowd and saying, whose head do I cut off? That they can save everybody a lot of time and trouble by looking at the crowd and going, that one. But you see, if they're not correct, if they have not been educated, if they do not know that they are a lunar being, if they do not live that out, when they point their finger at that one is going to be taken away. That one is going to be punished. That one is going to be fired. That one is going to be killed. See, the not-self can be really something. The moon is a cold, harsh mistress. This is not the warmth of the sun. You know, I honor the huntress goddess. You don't look her in the eye, she kills you. To be driven by the moon is very different than to be driven by the sun and in the earth. See, this is a very different creature. And they are not in any way committed to humanity. Understand that. They have a different allegiance entirely. You see, the program is more than just the Maya and the illusion that we live in. It's a vast thing. And there are different employees, quote unquote, of that program. Reflectors, eternally, as long as there has been beings endowed with consciousness in forms like us, reflectors have always been the ones who have been trained and conditioned to hold everybody to the line. They're really good at that. Very, very powerful in that. There's not a lot of them, eh? But there is a lot of them. It's always the joke with numbers and percentages. You know, we look at the reflector, we see, oh, 1%. You know, that's nothing. It's 70 million people. It's 70 million people who were born disappointed. You have no idea what that means. To come out of the womb and you're already disappointed. You know? You see, if the reflector doesn't wake up, they can never escape that. I mean, never, never, never get out of that. Never. Never. See, they want desperately, deep within them, to be able to fulfill their purpose. And their purpose is to be a signpost. You know that wonderful Michelangelo Sistine Chapel finger of God? You know? This is the reflector. They are an aspect of the finger of God. That's what they're here for. But they tend to be the finger of control, the finger of homogenization, the finger of... And you cannot blame them. They are dependent on the life force that they are a part of. They don't want any problems. They don't. And you see, the not-self reflector is designed to be so uncomfortable with instability, so uncomfortable with those that break the mold, that break the pattern. And they're the only ones that can tell. They take the program in. They live in the community of not-self that lives out the program. And anyone who shows signs of dysfunction, which means trying to break away from the normality and become abnormal, is immediately seen. That one. See, I'm somebody who really knows the dark side. I mean, I know the dark side in the way that nobody else does because I have a lot of light. So I get to see very dark things. The darkest thing I know as a construct in human design is the reflector. It's the darkest force we have is not self. And yet at the same time, the program cannot afford to give them up. This is the tragedy. See, the program needs the not self reflector. Who do you think keeps the boys in line that they go on Friday to the mosque? You know? They are organizers of the program. I mean, every time I have a reflector in my life, and this is the first time I've ever discussed this, I always say a kind of silent, private thank you. You know, that there's at least some of them. Not many. Not many. You know, the fractal of reflectors that will be able to help us find those that are ready. You know, this wonderful movie, The Matrix. You know, this ability to be able to recognize somebody that you can pull out of the illusion. Not waste your energy in all those beings that you can't pull out of the illusion. You can't. You can't. Yeah, it's a lunar day. You can't. But you see, the correct reflector, the awake reflector, they are truly the ones that can see the roses in the garbage dump. They're the ones that can tell right away who's going to be ready to break the covenant. They can see it. And we need that. This ability to be able to see who's ready, who's waiting. See, my concern about the reflector is that I deeply understand what their role is in maintaining this homogenized world, and I am its enemy. You know, the deepest forces that hold people from abnormality are rooted in the power of the reflector. They have an amazing place in our lives. They do. And for me, the not-self-reflector is much more powerful and much more dangerous than the not-self anything else. Because they hold those that could be saved. They hold them in the thrall of the program. It's what they do. You see, when I look at mythology, my own kind of mythology, looking at the roles of type, looking at what's there, I see so clearly the challenges on either side. You know? They seem... they tell you so much about what's necessary. It's like the generator having to know itself. What that really means, to know yourself. I mean, how profound a process that is. And how absolutely essential it is in order for the generator to be able to function correctly. When I look at the reflector and I see that everything about them is simply about being able to be surprised and be surprised ultimately in the most positive sense. How do they get there? I mean, I've tried. I'm grateful for the reflectors I have in my life, but you know, there are many, many more reflectors that I have given readings to that have not hung around in human design, at least not as far as I know. I don't think there's any greater challenge than to awaken a reflector. First of all, let's think about something. The moon. You know, nothing would exist on this planet without the moon. We forget that. You know, I'm Ra, I'm a sun worshiper. You know, I think the sun's holy, fill my body with warmth, bring all those wonderful things out of the ground, give life to the world. But if you forget about the moon, you're a fool. Because if you take the moon away, it all goes away. It all dies. It's all over. We're all in the thrall of that moon. It's not just the seas that rise and fall. The very liquid in our cells is moved by the waves. We are all very much in the hands of the moon. But only reflectors are locked to that cycle. Locked to it, like that radar grid going around. This is how they measure every lunar cycle, the 28, 29 day cycle. This is how they measure, like that radar, waiting for a new blip to show up, if there is one. I guess if you really want to understand their dilemma, it begins with their open G center. Because you see, their radar is very specific. You know, they need the consistency of an environment that they can keep on scanning. This is their role, scanning the community, constantly waiting for the blips. Their open G is really their core. It is. It is the community that is so important to them because this is where they have their responsibility to the program. They are servants of the program. And I don't mean that in any negative sense. Please understand, the program is only bad if you're trying to be abnormal and wake up. Otherwise, the program's delicious. It is the large, fucked up, normal life that everybody lives. And you know, they're all doing their thing out there. You know? It's crucifixion day, after all. Hey, I made two babies on crucifixion day. It's one of my favorite days. I love Good Friday. Anyway, think about what it's like to be a reflector child. Think about the 70 million reflector children and how many of them are born in places that you wouldn't want to be born in. In environments that you would never want to live in. Think about the influences that are there around them. And you see, when a parent has a reflector child, they really don't know what the hell to do. They don't. They don't get it. It's very, very difficult to get it. What is this thing? You know? I mean, you have a generator child and you can feel it. You feel it so much it drives you crazy, right? You know? You got a manifestor child and you're buying leashes and chains. You know it. You have a projector child and you wonder if they'll ever be alive. But you know it. And then you have a reflector child and you think, were the babies switched at the hospital or something? Where did this one come from? And what does it do? Oh, because you never get to them. You know, imagine being a generator mother and you've got a reflector child. You know, and there's your aura, a stone skimming off that lake. You know, endlessly skimming off that lake. And you see, the reflector doesn't care about you. The reflector baby is the only baby that thinks that a mother is simply an aspect of all mothers. Imagine. Reflectors have truly the, awake reflectors. The awakened reflector literally has no personal connection. It can't be personal. The other is just an aspect of an archetype of a thing. This is not my mother. This is an aspect of the mother. And I didn't get a great aspect, you know? It's not personal. And then they meet their father. Frightening for a reflector, you know? This aspect of it. You know, this is the male thing. Nothing's personal. And so you have the parent that, goo goo gaga, you know, you're my baby. And you know, the baby will play certain conditioned roles. You know, this is a baby after all. It needs to be nourished, whatever. But you don't feel that, gee, you're my mama? No, that's not there. It isn't. Not only that, they never stop measuring on their radar screen. See, with a reflector, you meet a reflector, you got a 28-day grace period. That's it. You know? Because when they get into the second cycle, hey, you know? I mean, my idea of being able to demonstrate what a reflector is to take a reflector and film them 24 hours a day for one cycle of the moon and then compress it at high speed. You know, this kind of film where you see a city street at, you know, zzz, you know, and you see the compression of the cycle for the reflector. See, this is their cycle. I mean, it is literally the only way in which they can operate correctly. And you see, your relationship to a reflector in that first 28 days means absolutely nothing. First of all, it's not personal for them. It's not. It isn't. For a reflector looking at me, I'm just another aspect of teacher. You know? And they can feel all of that. Because, of course, they take in their Teflon sampling. And, of course, everything in this world says, no, we're sun people. You got to be warm and cuddly and cozy and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And you got to do things like this. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. You got to make up your mind in the moment and this and that. And then you see what happens to them. They become the enforcers of the program. You know? Big braids on their shoulders. The program is the only way. And are they ever good at pointing out those that will challenge it? It's what scares me about reflectors. And I'm so aware of the fact that we will never really get to them. I mean, the only reflectors that we're ever going to have a chance with are the very few that have powerful fractal lines and the baby reflectors that are raised by aware parents. Because it's an extraordinary gift. I want you to grasp that gift. You see, this is hierarchical knowledge. It is not for everyone. You know, I will not go up on a cross. This is not what it's about. This knowledge is elitist. You know, it's useful for about 0.4% of the world, which is about the same percentage as it's always been. And in order to find those beings out there, you know, the one out of several hundred that's ready, you won't find them without aware reflectors. It's their job. See, I watched my generation kill themselves with unstructured shaman paths. I'm one of them, and I survived. But you see, there was nobody to come into my household when I was a boy and to say, give me this one. This one is different. You give me this one, I will train this one. That's what they used to do. You know, and then I would have had good training. And instead I had to watch friends die on acid trips and people go mad on drugs that they should never have taken and didn't know how to take and on and on and on. There was no one. We lost that. Those of us, the modern ones, the so-called civilized Western society ones, we didn't have our shaman anymore. We didn't have anyone to point the finger and say, this one, give me this one. So its life is not wasted. That its difference does not become the pain that it has to suffer through in its life. There was nobody there. It is not my job to recognize that. It isn't. It isn't. I'm a messenger. I just deliver a message. I don't care about who hears it. But you see, the reflector, they can actually tell who can hear it. They are the ones, they are the greatest recruiters we have. Because it will become more and more difficult. See, we're already on a cusp of this knowledge where it is becoming very generalized in the sense of its market. There are so many people now that are interested in human design who will never live out this fractal. Never. Never. I mean, just because, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend gets you to look at something, doesn't mean it's for you. The fact that you may find it interesting or attractive doesn't mean you're going to live out your design. It doesn't. It doesn't. This is not about what you want. This is about what you get. And you see, the ability to be able to find those, they're there. They're out there. And it's not that they're out there in some new agey place and just doing the wrong thing. They're caught in the conservative grind. They're caught in the ordinary life. They're caught in institutional, mindless, not self, day-to-day, mundane world. This is where you find them. You find them in the deepest, deepest holes in this not-self world of ours. And they're not missionaries. That's not what reflectors are about. They're not. They're spotlight people. You ever notice that? I mean, I live in this paradise, eh? When you watch the sunrise, I wake up facing east, and I'm an Aryan, so I'm an early riser. I watch the sunrise every day. And when the sun breaks over the hills, there is this huge spreading of light. It is absolutely incredible. But I've also sat on a rock in the middle of the Mediterranean, in the middle of the night, and watch the moon rise and have it put its spotlight right on my body. You see, the reflector, they're spotlight people. They're able to highlight that blip in a homogenized field that nobody else could see. I mean, think about radar for a moment, because it's a fantastic metaphor. I mean, it literally was the thing that resolved, in a sense, who was going to win the Second World War. Who's radar? You were able to see things that nobody else could see. Not only could you see them, you could see where they were going, you could see where they were coming from. And nobody else could see them. You see, the reflector that can look out at the homogenized field of cows and sheep can see the wolf. And they can ignore the rest. And that's not what we get from them. It isn't. It isn't. You see, when there are forces that will align against me, this knowledge, they will be spearheaded by reflectors. I like to keep my enemies close to me, you know, to know them better. Because, oh boy, do I understand, it's their job to stop abnormality. It's their job to hold the homogenized field together. It's their job. They are serving greater forces than the rest of us. I understand. But I want a few of them, okay? You know? Just a few of them. So we have some on our side. You know, who can be in competition with the dark side. You know, the dark side says, there they are, kill them. And the good side said, there they are, let's pull them out and make them abnormal. And I'm not kidding for a moment, eh? I mean, not for a moment. It's precisely what they are about. And you must be careful. I mean, I'm aware of that. It's a nice thing about being a manifester is you can inform when you want to. There There are so many things that I know about type and how these beings are intended to work, the way in which all of this goes along. I hoped for years that if I soft-pedaled what reflectors were and just concentrated on their lunar cycle, that I would manage to corral some of them, and somewhere down the line, I could sort of let them know, which is what I'm doing today. Because I have discovered that I didn't do a very good job. I didn't get a lot of them. They're very difficult to gain access to. You see, they're beyond non-energy type. You know, they are linked to something that transcends that. You see, when I say that they are servants of the program, they are servants of the greater life. You know, us down here, us solar types, you know, we're sort of, you know, they're watching over us the way a kindergarten teacher watches over the kiddies, you know, making sure that we all stay in line. I mean, that's who they are. And because of the way in which they are raised, the way they're conditioned, it's so difficult to get to them. And then you have the dilemma. The same dilemma I faced with projectors, which was why I was so concerned about them, is that you don't get this energy type, instant gratification, blah, blah, blah. I knew how long it was going to take projectors. But you know, when you say to somebody 7 years and they're looking ahead, geez, it's not like, wow, this is exciting. I'm just going to jump on board right now, you know? I mean, it isn't. You know, and then if I tell the reflector, look, you're the enemy and I'm trying to... What do they do that when they pull the enemy over to your side? You know? I don't know what the term is. I can't find it today. No. There's a... You turn them, right, exactly. I'm trying to turn these reflectors into being tools of abnormal awakening. What a trip. A number of years ago, I was in Cologne, in Germany. And I was staying at a couple's flat in town. And they had a little reflector boy, and he was 6 years old. And he was in some kind of a daycare program. And she was asking me, obviously, questions about how to raise a reflector. And I was telling her about, you know, the decision-making process for the child, not to push the child and give the child as much time as possible, a month, this kind of thing, you know, to try to get her to work the cycle with the child. And then she starts telling me a story. The kids were, the parents had been invited to one of these, you know, events that the teachers organize, that the kids do things and whatever. And one of the things the kids were doing is that they were doing this game, you know, where the music plays, musical chairs, where you go around, the music stops, and you pull the chair out and stuff like that. And all the kids were being lined up around chairs, and her son was sitting off in the corner. And, of course, the teacher is also under pressure because she's got all these parents there and wants everybody involved and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So she goes over to the little boy and she says to the little boy, she said, where would you like to sit? He said, in the middle. So while all the other kids played musical chairs, he sat in the middle of the circle and watched. And, you know, it was such a classic reflector image, eh? I mean, just classic. You know, this is who they are. You know, they don't need, it's not their personal place that ever matters. They're the most impersonal of all creatures. And of course, it makes it very difficult because of the demands of this life to be personal, to be a lover, to be a parent, to be a child, to be all of these things. And they are so impersonal and it's misunderstood. I mean, after all, they're like me, they're all unemotional. We can be cool, icy, hard-ass people. I know. I live it. You know, and when you're a reflector on top of that and you are basically impersonal, where humanity is sort of, you know, your second cousin, you know? It's like, all right, I got to look after them, and you know, these idiots that never stay in line. And how difficult it is to accept that as a parent, that you raise a child impersonally. You know, the best thing to do with a reflector child is the moment you can, get them out of the house. You know, put them into child care, daycare, people care, dog care, cat care, any kind of care. Put them out in the world. Put them out in their community. They have to be totally absorbed in that. It's how they begin to feel their world. It's the only way that they're going to begin to recognize who they are. And you see, they can only be comfortable with who they are when their environment is stable. When everybody plays by the rules, whatever the rules of that community, that culture, whatever the case may be. And they are so deeply upset when the rules are broken. You know? And it's not personal. Yes, you can execute them. It's not personal. Not at all. It's just, well, they're a problem. And we don't need problems, do we? I mean, we don't need people thinking that they know, do we? We certainly don't need people thinking they are their own authority now, do we? The program is the authority. All hail the program. See, when I say that they're the enemy, they're the ones that keep everybody else locked into the not-self. Think about it. This little slice, the driving force, keep everybody in line. There has never, ever, ever been an attempt of any kind to wake up reflectors. Nobody, you check all the literature, you know, you can read in ancient literature a grasping of generators and manifestors and projectors. You can actually see and smell it. They don't have the same language, obviously. But there is nothing anywhere, anywhere about the reflector. It's only now. I mean, this is why we live in such a time that is so extraordinary. Because it is now that on the fractal line there are those, regardless of their type, that there is the opportunity to step out of the program. You see, when I break my covenant with the program, it's not a big deal. Not to the program. You know, the program says, hey, he wasn't good in here anyway, let him do his thing, you know. He's not going to take everybody away. We're not going to lose the main drift of things. It's okay. But the fact that he's recruiting reflectors, this is a problem. You know? This we don't like at all. We don't have that many to give away. We need them. The 7 billion that need to be controlled on the reins of reflectors. It's really something to grasp. And you see, I love it. Because every time it's possible that a reflector is so lucky that they can enter into a process of being correct. This is the most classic breaking of the covenant that one can imagine. You see, it doesn't matter to me that the program this time, this incarnation, after all, I know that you are crystals of consciousness and not bodies. that the bodies are the medium for the trip, and it is the medium of the trip that defines your type. I mean, I understand. But you see, the personality, it has a right to awaken. It doesn't matter what your body is. It has a right to awaken. That though there are few reflectors that will ever awaken, it is their right to awaken. It is. But for them, like it is to enter into a reflector process, to accept the fact that decision-making can be such an arduous process, to accept all the things that come with being a reflector, this is no easy task. And it's not like the projector that can actually have a trajectory of knowledge and accomplishment. I mean, for the reflector, knowledge is simply a matter of grasping the lunar cycle, being able to understand one's own radar system, to understand the program, because that's their business. But most of it is not that. You see, it's beginning to get to their uniqueness. And their uniqueness is there. It doesn't matter that they're open. You can see it in the colors, in the tone, in the bass. You can see it in the deep complexity of the way in which they are configured, that the uniqueness is there. And it has to emerge. See, the teaching that I gave to reflectors when I began, like any teaching I gave when I began, carried with it the one essential truth that makes a difference. When the reflector is committed to not making decisions other than on their lunar cycle, then they gain that one opportunity to be able to live out their unique authority, regardless of the overriding role that the program has imposed on them. And you see, when they break the covenant with the program, this is something very special. You know, this is when the news goes out on the crystal fractal line. Hey, you got a reflector. You know, that's like having a lawyer go to heaven. You know, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. We got another one. The man got a reflector. Can you believe that? And of course, on the other side, they're saying that son of a bitch sold out. I mean, how does a reflector do that? How do they turn their back on us? You know, I mean, reflectors can be so deeply punished for that. Eh? I mean, deeply. They have a very, very extraordinary role. And it's such a deep process to get them to a place where they can live that out. And nobody can help. You know, I would love to be able to say, here's the way to do it. Give you a list. You know, we all have to go through our own process. It's the only way that it works. And you have to be deeply, deeply dedicated as a reflector. Because there is no other way. And it's very, very lonely. There is no other way. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, a lot of time. They work on a different calendar. You know? It's a different life for them. And it's their own. And the moment that they are really clean, that is clean in the sense that they truly are aligning their geometry through their authority, that's when they begin to be of service. They're here to be of service. This is the role. And the service is their gift, that they can recognize those that are ready to break the covenant. This is the great surprise, you know? to awaken in someone who doesn't even know that they're there and they're ready to have somebody who sees it, who takes them out of the madness of the world and opens up the possibility of what life can be for them. That's the reflector's gift. Okay, let's have a break.